Welcome to Your Career Cure podcast, where amazing professionals and entrepreneurs share their inspirational stories so you can get a dose of a happy career, happy life. And now, your host, Gail Tolstoy Miller.
Welcome to Your Career Cure. I am so excited to have Gav Gillibrand. He's going to talk all about fitness and health. He is a fitness and health coach. Gav, why don't you fill in the blanks and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thanks for inviting me on the podcast to start with. I really appreciate the invite. Where do you want me to start? I mean, should I tell you what I'm doing now?
How did you start? Like, what's your background?
Yeah, it's a good story. And this kind of talks about the whole backstory. I don't know if it's the same over in the US as it is in the UK, but when you're about 14 or 15, when you're kind of deciding on what career you want to go into, they do this thing called work experience in the UK, where you go out into a business, maybe like you went into a bank or an insurance company, or do they do that in the US for school kids?
No, it's not required now,
it's kind of just to give you an idea. So when you come to about 15, 16, all my other schoolmates went to like a typical, you know, like the bank or the business. And I was always into sport and fitness and health. I was obsessed by sport as a kid. And I said I wanted to go and work in a gym. And everyone was like, and I'm 15 at the time. And I remember this clearly as day, because it kind of changed my life. I went to this gym, and this is 1988, 89. I'm about 15, 16 years old. Showing my age now.
I know, I'm counting.
And this is a true story. I was on this machine with the owner of the gym, and he was putting me through a workout, get a bit of a sweat on. And I was kind of into bodybuilding. That was my thing when I was 15, 16. I don't know why, looking at guys in posing pouches. Anyway, and I saw this guy, and step aerobics had just landed in the UK. Obviously, you guys in the US are quite a few years ahead of the UK, but 88, 89, step aerobics had just come. And there was this guy in a leotard, quite tall, very good looking, probably 22, 23. And he took 30 or 40 women through this step class, and he literally had them all, it was all women, had them all eating out of the palm of his hand. And I remember saying to myself, that's who I want to be. And he had a ponytail and a leotard. I'm not necessarily saying I wanted the ponytail or the leotard, but I wanted to be him. I remember seeing, okay, that's what a fitness instructor is. I didn't know there was a thing. And I remember looking at him saying, that's what I want to do. So that's what I did.
So you did it for the chicks. You did it for the ladies.
That was a massive, I have to admit, it was an appeal for me. Yeah, I saw him. I saw that, and there was a range of women, probably from 30 to 55, and they were looking at him stepping up. And I remember thinking, that's cool. You can earn money to basically dance and exercise. I remember thinking, okay. So I finished my exams, went to university, did my degree in sports and exercise science. But in the year before that, I actually went to work in a local gym as a fitness instructor. And that was the sort of the turning point. And that's I then had a, dare I say, a 15 or 17 year gap. Shall I tell you what I did in those 17 years?
Oh, do tell, because it's right, really okay, interesting. Well, please.
Right.
The is. Audience this, wants to know.
And this is a true story. I was on my lunch break in that gym before I went to university, before I had to do my degree. And on the notice board in the staff room, staff canteen, whatever. And it had auditions for Blind Date. And now in the late 80s, early 90s, Blind Date was the Saturday night TV program on the whole. It was the equivalent, bear in mind back then, there was no reality TV, but there was Blind Date was probably the closest thing to reality TV. And this is where a girl would come on and there'd be this partition and three guys were on stools. And she would ask these questions to these guys without seeing each other. And then she would pick the winner. And it was huge. It was 20 million people watch it every Saturday night back in the 80s, early 90s. So I saw these auditions. And I was far too confident for my own good.
Yeah, what made you do that? Like, what made you want to apply for that?
Because I was a complete show off, if I'm honest. I was totally up my own bum, if I'm completely honest. And I said, I'm going to audition for that. I went along to the audition a couple of weeks later. Thought, plus it was my chance to get on TV. You know, I thought, how can I make sure I get picked to go on? And if we go back just 2 weeks before that first interview, I'd actually seen in the newspaper, the local newspaper, auditions for a strippogram to be a stripper, literally 2 weeks before this audition. And I thought I could do that as well. It just turned up in like a bar or a pub, you know, dressed in the, back then it was the officer and the gentleman, mm-hmm. you know, the white naval uniform, the Richard Gere. That was very popular back then, you know, like Chippendale style. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'd been for the first audition and I'd been given the job, but I hadn't actually done a job. But when I went on blind date for the auditions, I thought, how can I ensure that I get on the TV here? So I basically bullshitted her. I told her I'd been working as a stripper for a year. Oh. I lied, basically. Okay, slap me on the hand for that. But I did. And I basically just sailed through these three auditions, got onto the TV show, and she ended up picking me. She picked me for the date.
Wow.
And, that was my kind of... And what happened is, in the meantime, in that year before going to university, I actually started working full-time as I call it a male review artist. That's the posh way of saying I used to get naked for clothes at the weekend. Now, what started it, off as a bit of fun and money. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Go. So, first of all, the show Blind Date reminds me, and I could be wrong, it's the equivalent of, and this is a very old show in the United States, The Dating Game. It could be very similar.
So. Yeah, I guess it sounds very similar.
But it's something very interesting that you said, that you lied a little bit or you exaggerated your background.
Embellished the truth.
And it kind of is, that's very relevant because you did that to get the job. And I actually have written articles about this as a recruiter of like, how much should you embellish to get the job, right? Like, what are your thoughts on that? You did that. Do you think it's the right thing to do?
Well, I guess, I mean, morally, you could argue that it wasn't the right thing to do. However, the only time where I think if it's not going to do anyone any harm, and at least you, if you can back up, if you get given the job, I mean, I've never actually been employed by anyone. I've always been self-employed. But I guess if you get a position from bullshitting or embellishing the truth on your CV, maybe, if you then can't back up what you've done, then you're going to be in trouble. And if people get hurt or people lose money, then there's a problem, isn't there? But with this, I weighed it up. I thought, hang on, I'm actually going to do this anyway.
Right.
I'd been given the job 2 weeks before. I hadn't actually had my first gig. So by the time the show had come on, so you film it and then it was shown on TV 3-4 months later, I'd actually was working as a stripper at the weekends. So it was like a semi-truth. So right. I guess you've got to fake it until you make it. They say that, don't they? I don't know whether that's true.
So a stripper, what was it? Can you go into more detail about that? Because stripper, there's a huge definition of stripper, especially in the United States, right? Like there's the Chippendales where they're not completely getting naked. They have got their little G-string on. You go to the review, you know, you go to the show. It.
Like
are you getting Mike. Are you getting completely like full on naked?
Well, I'll give you the backstory.
All right, let me know.
When Magic Mike came out, you know, with Shannon Tatum, that was a very, very close representation of what the industry was like. It actually did us a lot of favors as guys that had been in the industry because, as you said, when you say stripper, particularly women, they would kind of conjure up an image of what it could be. And very often it could be wrong. You know, I did it because I could and it was fun. It was good money. But so it was a lot of Magic Mike type stuff, like on a show, 300-400 girls, or there was that side of things, the proper show. Then I would do like, you call it bachelorette parties, don't you?
Yes.
In the States. We call it a hen party. So same thing. But, you know, the girl's getting married. They're in a club or a restaurant or a bar, and you rock up in a costume and do 5-10 minutes, dance around to the music, just down to the string. You know, however, towards the end of the career, because what was fun and money for 1 year became a 17-year gig for me,
wow,
which was crazy. The last 7 years, I did go completely naked, I have to admit.
But is it, you know, the rules are very different here in the United States versus England, right? Like, I think we're very conservative when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is it something in England that is, I mean, you tell me, is it more acceptable? Is it kind of like black market type naked? Like, what are the rules in England when it comes to full on naked male?
There was, as far as I know, there's no law to say that can't happen. I mean, these were like private clubs or events. So there was that side of, but funnily enough, for the first sort of 10 years of doing what I was doing, there was always the difference between the guys that didn't do the full strip and the guys that did. And the ones that didn't, we always thought we were slightly better than the ones that did. There was that divide mentally. But I then became one of those guys because that's where the money was. It was
more. So you got more money. You got more money,
more money, more jobs. And there was a massive, gay market. That's where most of the money was. There was a big opportunity. So that took me up to age 35. And I thought, hang on, you know what? I'm approaching 5 years or 40. I need to get back into what I'm actually trained to do. I said, this was only meant to be 1 or 2 years as fun. And it was just so much fun. So much travel all around Europe. It was very, very hard to stop. It was a bit of a, I wouldn't say it was golden handcuffs because it wasn't stupid money, but it was the lifestyle that went with it. And you can fill in the blanks yourself there. It was just too much fun to stop.
Yeah, no, I get it. Now, curious, who tips better, women or men?
Well, to start with, no one tips in the UK.
Oh, so how does it work? You get paid by the venue?
We'd get paid by the venue or the person booking. So it's very different. Like, you know, when you see it in the States, you know, the guys and the girls are putting the money down. That doesn't happen. Does not happen over in the UK. Doesn't exist.
And are they allowed to touch you? Like, Chippendales, the United States, because I've been to a bachelorette party. This is like eons ago. And I mean, it's interesting about the double standard that we have in the United States. And I don't know if it exists in England, but in male strip clubs, it depends on the state too, but predominantly, if you go to a female strip club, let's say, right?
Yeah.
They're not allowed to be touched. Like, no. There's bouncers. I mean, yeah, there is that private room that you go back. I'm not sure what goes on in the private room. Men usually
whatever you can think goes on.
Yeah, exactly. So there's like a double standard. But yeah, when you go to the Chippendales, women are like all over the men, the dancers. They could touch each other. It's really very, very different. And I feel like there is a double standard. What's it like in England? What was it like for you?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. I worked with some of the guys. I actually worked with a couple of the Chippendales. They came into one of our groups. But it is a very different standard. And let's face it, the guys are probably doing it for a slightly different reason than some of the women. And I'm generalizing here, but most of the women don't want some average guy in the crowd fondling them. But if you flip that around to the way that men think about what I just said there, getting girls to fondle you and getting paid, it's kind of a completely different mindset, isn't it? You know, there's pros and cons. That it's a very weird lifestyle. I realized once coming out of that, getting back into the real world, because effectively, working 5-6 nights a week and coming in when everyone else was getting out of bed, also is a very skewed idea of the relationship between men and women, because you obviously got offered things on a platter, so to speak.
Right.
Which is not real life. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the environment. I
used to be in the music industry and I know.
Yeah. Yeah, so then take that person out into real life. It was a bit of a transition, and I'll be honest, I at the time was trying to, stripping was just became fun and money. And I was trying to do a little bit of TV, a little bit of acting. That wasn't happening. I realized that to probably be a Brad Pitt or someone, you probably need to be trained. And I was just turning up to auditions without any training. And I kind of finished that at age 35. And I came to London at age 35 to think, okay, I'm going to get back into being a full-time trainer, coach, with my tail between my legs. It was a massive fall from grace. I literally came to London. Oh, I can't believe I'm. It was a step down in my head. I was like, This is where I was, but I know I have to. I couldn't get to 40 and then start a career. I needed to kind of 35. It's not too old to get back into what I know. And having said that, the last 12 years have been the best 12 years. That was a great, you know what? Looking back though, wouldn't change that for a world. A lot of people, a lot of guys that come out of the industry, they're kind of embarrassed about what they did. No, if I hadn't have done those 15, it was 17 years of what I did, travel around Europe, meet all these people, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today.
Right. So it sets you up for your next move.
It sets me up for the next move. I've learned a lot. There's things I've seen and done that I probably can't tell the grandchildren.
But I hear you.
Served me very, very well. And I actually think, believe it or not, if I'd got into fitness full-time at age 21, which was the plan, probably now, 25 years later, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. So almost starting at 35, which in terms of career, if you think about it, it's quite late, isn't it, really? To restart over in fitness has actually made me better at what I am now because of that, the grounding, doing this very strange but amazing, amazing fun career.
Right. So I'm curious, what did you learn about women doing this, being a stripper? Is there anything that you learned about women and men that kind of left like, wow, like this is interesting through your stripping?
Can I be brutally honest?
Yeah, I don't want you lying to me. I don't want you to fake it till you make it on this question.
No. Okay. Okay.
Just say, okay, look, so I'm from New Jersey. Just put it out there. Don't worry. Okay, it's a safe space.
The amount of brides-to-be that would sleep with strippers is a ridiculous.
Wow.
That's all I'll say. That's
wow.
All I'll say.
All, okay. The listeners
saying,
right
I'm
now.
Not, I'm not saying all.
Whoa. The listeners yeah, not, right now.
Yeah.
All these grooms now. Soon to be grooms are going to be listening to this and be like, there is no way.
But here's the flip side. Gail, here's the flip side.
But men are doing the same thing.
What I was going to say, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Works
right?
Both ways.
When those 10 guys go to Vegas for a long weekend, fill in the blanks.
Yep.
That's just the way of the world. Is that right? Is it wrong? That's not up to me to say. But you know, I've got a lot of respect for women. It's not like a lot of the guys came out of the industry thinking, lost a little bit of respect for women. I think, hang on, you were the one that was taking advantage of them. So it's a two-way street. I've got a lot of respect for women, all the respect in the world for women. It hasn't changed my opinion right. of them. But
how does that work? Were they like hitting on you after? Were they like, how does that?
Yeah.
They were totally hitting on you. And then, you know, it's interesting. I think because I've only been to one Chippendales once.
Yeah.
It's a type of environment as a woman that just makes you feel like you let your guard down. Like it's okay to, it's almost good for women, I think, that are shy, that don't have the capability of making the first move in a weird way. I've never thought of about it until now. Where you can just go and if you have any hangups about sex or whatever it may be, it's like, yes, it kind of is all about looks in a sense. There's something, let's face it, it's kind of superficial. You don't know this person, but it does, it's almost therapeutic. Like I almost feel like someone could do therapy and do this now that I think about it. Yeah. And I think that most of those women that, did that would never do that normally ever.
No, absolutely.
Am I right?
Like, you're absolutely right. It's almost like the defenses have dropped, the inhibitions have just been obliterated. Yes. They're in a safe crew with the girls. Like it's like all no holes barred. But once today's over, it's back to normal, and they probably would never do anything like that again. That's kind of what would happen. Yeah.
It's very interesting. It's definitely interesting. Yeah. So tell us about, because I know our audience really wants to know. I know we're going to talk about fitness and health and how it obviously impacts us all, especially now because of COVID. But so tell us a little bit more about that aspect.
Well, it's a big passion of mine. But last year was a very, very strange year, wasn't it? I think in terms of, from a business perspective, what happened with my business personally, it was excellent for my business. I think it was a bit of a perfect storm. Everyone was kind of moving online. Once everyone, after March, April, May, once everyone got over the shock of the fact this is going to be in for the long haul, and they realized if they'd still had a job, I think people went one or two ways. Most of my clients, if I look at nearly all my clients now, they're men and women that are fairly well off, probably were doing a lot of international travel, like their food, like their wine, maybe got 30 pounds or more to lose between the age of 35 and 55. So probably got kids, some have got grown-up kids. That's my target market. Now, a lot of the clients I'd previously spoken to that use the excuse of not having the time because of travel, work, family, that was literally obliterated. So when I had a conversation with them again, they were like, you know what, this is the perfect time because they're at home, you know, they get all their meals, they've got 100% control over everything they put in their mouth and all the exercise they could do. So for some people, they literally ran with it. And I probably got the best results ever last year in terms of client results. But the flip side of that, if you've got someone that was lost their job and they're stuck at home in an environment maybe they didn't want to be in, it's almost gone the other way. It's almost like 180 degrees for some people. Like some people have really, really struggled, haven't they? So yeah. I think a lot of people have come out of COVID, although we're still in lockdown at the moment in the UK. There's a lot of people have put so much weight on because the figures of alcohol consumption have literally gone through the roof. I'll be honest, I hold my hand up and I tell this to all my clients. I drank more in 2020 than I've ever done in my whole life. Just a mixture of a bit of boredom, no travel, not seeing anyone. So it's not, and I've got a lot going on in my life, but when you find you've had a couple of gin and tonics on a Monday night, you've got to start looking at yourself. And I'm teaching this to other people. So I think it really, for some people, it's been a great year in terms of health and fitness. Other people, it's been complete opposite.
Yeah. So to be honest with myself, and I know I reached out to you a couple months ago, I think this would be important to discuss is, like all of a sudden we're on the go, we're in lockdown. And so you're not moving as much, right? You're at home, you're eating things you normally wouldn't eat, you're snacking. Yeah. And then it becomes this like cycle of not being able to get out of it. It's like you're constantly on the couch. And here it's cold. I know you guys get a lot of rain. I live in an area, well, New Jersey, New York. You know, we have seasons, it's freezing, we've got tons of snow. Yeah. And not that there's any excuse, but I also think from a mental, I think it's all mental. I really do, because I'm sure there are a set of people that are using this time to get themselves in shape, even though they're at home, because you can use the internet, right? You can do it virtually versus someone who is just in this big funk. And then I think your metabolism, like something happened with my metabolism. I have no idea. Like, in such a short period of time, and I'm naturally a thin person. I've never really had a weight problem. If anything, I was probably more underweight than anything. But I'm sure there are plenty of people like me that are in the same boat, right? I mean, are you finding that?
Absolutely. You know, as you said, just the basic movement, step count has just gone down massively. Like, you know, even simple things like, you know, even walking to the bus stop or the tube or the train, that half a mile walk either way, you know, you add up 1 mile over 5 days, that's 5 miles that people aren't. So you actually have to go out and do a planned session. As you said, when the weather comes in, this last 3 months, this lockdown, obviously it's been a bit colder and it's darker. It's been particularly tough for a lot of people. I don't know what it's been like. Are you still in lockdown in New York area now?
I mean, there's different definitions of it.
Yeah.
So we're starting to open up a little bit more. We're able to go out, but a lot of people are working from home still. The schools are, some of them are in a hybrid. Some of them are fully back. Some of them are not. So it really, yeah. The restaurants, they're opening, but at not full capacity. I believe movie theaters are opening up soon in New York City. In New Jersey, I don't believe they're open. So no. We're slowly because of the vaccines. But depending upon the state, it's very different. I think in the UK, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're not doing it by region. You're doing it for the whole country, right? It's the
whole
same.
The whole country.
In the United States, they leave it up to the individual states.
Which is nuts.
It's crazy because... You know, you could go over to Pennsylvania. I live near Pennsylvania. I live near New York. And yes, the governors have kind of band together regionally to try to do the same thing. But it becomes very difficult because it's almost like a battle of the states in the United States. And then it becomes very political. Like, oh, these states are the blue states. These states are the red states. You know, mask, not mask.
Do they not realize if they just... right or wrong, if they just did it uniform, the result would become like the whatever the result needs to be, it would be so much better. Like, but then put it into perspective, you can fit the whole of the UK into America about 40 times. So it shows how big you are. Like
how big are you from a state perspective?
A lot of your state, like Texas, I think you can get the UK into Texas 4 times.
Oh, really? I didn't realize you were that small.
Just into Texas.
Okay. So, yeah, it's difficult. I agree. I think they should just do a national. But the problem is that the United States is so diverse. Not that the UK isn't from a geographical and you know, you've got farms, you've got cities, you've got this. I know you've got countrysides and everything like that, like us. But it's just at such a bigger scale. I do think they should nationalize it. But, you know, we're all about our freedom, you know? I think it's very complicated because I get it.
Yeah.
But from a fitness and health, let's dive deeper in that.
Yeah.
Because I do think that when you are in better shape, when you're eating better, you perform better at your job. And absolutely. I just was watching something yesterday, which is fascinating. And it's not shocking that they did a study on Alzheimer's patients or people that are about to get, or they have it in the beginning stages and the plaque in their brain. And they said that one of the biggest ways to alleviate that and to reduce the plaque is through exercise. And that at a certain age, if you just at least exercise and eat sensibly, you don't have to go crazy. You will be in great shape, like mentally, physically. So if you could kind of go more into that, that would be great.
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, I think a lot of people make the mistake of separating mentally and physically as like two separate entities. Yeah. It's all one. Like, you can't be healthy mentally without the physical side and vice versa. If there's a mismatch, you're only as strong as your lowest, the weakest link. So it sounds a bit of a cliche, but it's true. So everything you do that's physically good for you is going to be good for you mentally and vice versa. So it's just a case of, it's simple though. It's almost moving the body every day. That would be the first recommendation. Everyone needs to go for a walk every single day. As a mainstay, all of my clients, regardless without going into their nutrition or their actual training program, I ask them to get 5,000 steps a day. And that's the equivalent to about a 30-minute walk.
Do you think that's enough? I've heard 10,000 steps should be the minimum.
It probably should. However, if someone's going from nothing... Like 10, you and me, 10,000 steps for sure. But if someone's... Right. Bear in mind, a lot of my clients are 270 pounds. Mm. Guy in his early 50s. Not been in the gym since he was in his mid-20s, needs to lose 80 pounds. Absolutely, he should be doing more. But going for a walk 4 times a week around the block is a great start. All I'm saying is a bare minimum, a 30-minute walk every day. You need to get out and get some sunlight as well. Just some basics. Obviously, there's the reduction of alcohol for most people, but it's controlling calories. What most people don't understand is that fat loss is very, very simple. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's extremely simple. Now, there's different arguments and different schools of thought, but
there is. There's tons of different diets, you know, the low carb, you know.
But they all work on the same mechanism. They're all bullshit. Like, if there's 100 diets out there, I'll tell you why. Because the only way that you can lose body fat, Gail, is by being what we call a calorie deficit. Have you ever heard me talk about a calorie deficit?
Yes, yes. Because okay. I remember I reached out to you, like, why am I starting to get a belly? I've always had a six pack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So for the watchers or the listeners, let me explain. A calorie deficit is where you just burn more than you consume. So let's say calories coming in is all the food and drink that you have coming in on one side over a daily basis. Calories out is your metabolism, which is the calories you would burn if you've got out of bed and laid on the sofa and did nothing. And that's determined by the size of your body, sex, age, different things. That's predetermined. We can't change that. As your metabolism, plus all the exercise that you do intentionally, like going to the gym, going for a jog, going on a bike, and any incidental movement, like walking the dog, tidying up the yard, gardening, anything, all the movement, as long as the calories out is slightly higher than the calories in, you will lose body fat. So someone says, I'm watching my diet and I'm exercising, but I'm not losing weight. We know by definition, they can't be in a calorie deficit, because if they were, unless they change every physics law known to man, they will lose body fat.
So what about, I don't mean to interrupt, but the like sugar? Does it matter what you eat as long as there's a deficit? So if I want to eat ice cream, or if I want to have a chocolate croissant, or let's say a Big Mac, does it really matter as long as I'm in a deficit?
You're absolutely right. It doesn't. And this is the argument that I still have with many health professionals, even so-called experts that think hormones are responsible for fat loss. And I'll explain exactly what I mean. So you're absolutely right. If you're in a calorie deficit, regardless of the source of calories, you'll lose body fat. However, I'm not saying that's the optimal way, because if you eat Big Mac every day, it's junk, it's crap, there's no nutrients, you know, it's not good, a not good source of energy. But let's say you ate a Big Mac and it was 700 calories and your target for the day was maybe 1500 calories. You know, if you have 700 for a Big Mac, you've got 800 left for the rest of the day. If you're in a calorie deficit, you'll lose body fat. Now, is that the optimal choice of calories? Probably not. You'd be way better with maybe some fruit, some lean proteins, some oatmeal, some sweet potato, vegetables. Of course, that would be a much better way of getting 700 calories. But the body doesn't look at it like that. Now, the other school of thought, and I'm sorry, but they're wrong.
Okay, I'll tell you right now,
they're just fucking wrong. They're wrong.
Okay.
Because all the studies show that they're wrong. They will say that bad, you know, sugar and carbs raise insulin, which it does. But let me explain. Give me the context.
Okay.
They say it raises insulin. And then when the body releases insulin, which from the pancreas, to lower that blood sugar, they say the release of insulin, because insulin is a fat storage hormone, that's what makes people fat. Now, this is true to a certain extent, but what will trump all of that is the calories consumed over the day. If you're constantly releasing insulin, it is a fat storage hormone, but it is trumped by the fact that you haven't gone over your calorie deficit. That makes sense. Yeah. So it doesn't matter if you're releasing insulin all day long, as long as you're in that calorie deficit, because there's been various studies. Like, there's a guy that I think a guy in America did it, and a guy in Australia ate nothing but McDonald's for a whole month.
Yes. That was
hot. And he lost weight. He lost weight. But
I don't know if we're thinking about the same study, because this was years ago. A guy ate McDonald's every day and they checked his cholesterol. He gained weight. His cholesterol went up. It was bad.
Put it this way, Gail. The only way he gained weight was by not getting this balance right. If you say we know that you burn body fat, let's say, for example, at 1500 calories, you start to burn body fat, for example. If someone eats 2,000 calories and it's the healthiest food on the planet, are they going to lose weight or are they going to get fat? Question to you.
if their the calories is more, they're going to get, they're going to gain weight.
They're going to gain weight. So it doesn't matter how healthy these calories are. Okay. So the opposite of that, if they eat a McDonald's every day, yet they're in a calorie deficit, are they going to gain weight or they're going to lose fat?
They're going to lose fat.
You just said it. So the guy that I saw, this he ate nothing but McDonald's every day, but trained.
Okay.
He lost a lot of body fat. However, if you were to take his blood, his health markers would be all over the place. Now it's not a healthy weight. Yeah, his cholesterol would be through the roof. Blood sugar would be awful. Nutrients, there's none. His skin was awful. He looked awful. However, he was quite lean. He lost weight. So
I think that is, but I think it sends a good message, because I think that so many people, when they diet, they deprive themselves of the things that they love. And I think life is too short. I feel like if you plan your day and your calories, you could have that pizza, you could have that ice cream, as long as you're, as you said, expending more energy, you're burning more calories, or, you know, it's got to be the deficit. Or if you just want to maintain your weight, it's got to be equal. However, 100%. Let me ask you this. Does metabolism, you're resting, and this is where I think this, I don't know if this is truth or not. Your metabolism, your resting metabolism slows down. Does that impact? So let's say you've eaten everything the same as you had when you were 35, right? And you never gained weight. Now you're older, and it seems your metabolism has slowed down, and now you're gaining weight, but you're not doing anything different. Actually, you may be exercising a little bit more, but you're still, is that a truth or is that a lie?
It's truth. And I'll tell you what the main culprit for that, first of all, for men and then women, because it's slightly different.
Right, and you mentioned
guys
that.
Get into your 40s. Yeah, exactly. So with every decade of a man's life, you'll probably lose about 10% of muscle mass. So we're slowly losing muscle mass unless you're constantly trying to build muscles. So if you did nothing, the physique that a guy would have in his 20s to say when he was 45, if we tested him, he'd probably have less muscle and more body fat as a general rule.
Right.
For you guys, you've got different hormones, you've got menopause, all these different things. So yeah, you're always fighting a losing battle. So it's not that much, but metabolism will slow down because generally you tend to use less energy. You might have slightly less muscle mass. So muscle on woman and a man is very expensive real estate. So the more muscle you can have, the more calories you'll burn at rest. So that's why it's very important for you guys, for ladies, to actually do strength training and weight training. As you get older, it's probably the most important thing you could do, because the more muscle mass you have, and we're only talking a couple of pounds, like you guys, it's impossible to get big and muscular. By doing regular strength training, you're going to maintain the muscle you've got. If anything, maybe gain a couple of pounds of muscle, of lean body tissue. If we were to compare, let's say a woman was 150 pounds, one had more muscle, the other woman was 150 pounds, but she had less muscle. The lady with more muscle would burn way more calories just sitting there than the same woman, different woman at the same weight, because muscle mass, it just generates more energy. So that's why I'm always telling all my female clients, you have to do weight training, because one, it's the quickest way to burn body fat because it makes you strong and build muscle. Same for a guy, you know, as guys age, we also lose testosterone, which is the male hormone for building muscle and fat. And by the way, we have 16 times more testosterone than the average woman, which unfortunately makes it a lot easier for us to build muscle and burn body fat. So
yeah,
you guys are fighting a losing battle at the best of times, you know, so it's harder. But you're right. As you get older, everything just changes. So it does become harder. I'm 47, and the things that I eat, I have to be really careful. Otherwise, I can gain weight so much quicker. But if I look at my physique compared to when I was 20, you know, I was probably 7 or 8 kilos heavier and leaner and could eat pretty much what I wanted, you know. And that's just, we're all on a slow ticket towards the final destination, aren't we? Without a return.
So your advice. So we're all sitting home. All right. So here's the picture. Here's a scenario.
Yeah.
We're working from home. let's say someone really can't get out that much. They can't walk that much. All right. They're pretty much stuck in their home. Maybe they have a child. They can't leave. What should they do at home that will help them burn calories?
Well, I'll flip that round. I would get them to look at their nutrition before they did the exercise.
I would get them to
control that, because think about this. Is it easier to burn 500 calories from an hour's worth of exercise, or is it easier to not eat the 500 calories in the first place?
I would think reduce it. Well, it depends on the person, I think. There are people that very difficult not to eat a lot, right? Like, I think it's personal.
I'm not saying it's difficult, but what I'm saying is...
I would cut the calories. It would be easier for me personally, but I think for some other people, it might be more difficult. I don't know.
But you just said someone that can't get out. Okay, let's say they're stuck at home, they can't exercise. Okay, slice of cake, 500 calories, or go for an hour jog. What's easier to do? Like the cake is a decision, right? It's a heartbeat, snap of the fingers. So you can get into a calorie deficit by controlling what goes in your mouth. Exercise is the icing on the cake, no pun intended. do you see what I mean? So exercise is a massive part. There's all the feel-good factors, physical, mental, burns calories, build muscle, all these things. We move. If we don't move, we rust. But if someone can't do that, maybe they're restricted or they're injured or time constraints or children, as you mentioned, the first stop would be control what they put in. Because what most people do is they think they can exercise away the calories they've taken in. It's so much easier to control what you put in your mouth and then look at exercise as a secondary. That's what I would do.
It doesn't sound like you really burn that many calories in an hour.
Well, exercising, you don't. Yeah, it's hard. Really,
yeah, hard. It really doesn't seem like it's a lot. It's like, all right, you're exercising for an hour and you're burning off, I don't know, a piece of cake.
and that's what I mean. So it's an hour's worth of exercise that maybe not everyone, but a lot of people don't even enjoy exercise. Now, I'm not saying it's easy to say no to the cake, but it is a simple decision. It's like, do I eat this or do I not eat it? And it can be done in a second. So once you get the big part of what I do with my clients, yeah, I'll teach them calorie deficit exercise, but it's the psychological aspect of fat loss. The mechanics of fat loss are very easy. You exercise, get into a calorie deficit. That's the mechanics. The psychological aspect, and you mentioned it, Gail, you said some people find it very hard to say no to the cake. So a big part of my program is finding that weakness. Like, why is it you find it hard to say no to the cake?
Right.
And once we can establish maybe behavioral patterns and put in a contingency plan, or, okay, when I want to have this, I'll have this instead. Or maybe not even get to the point where the cake is in the house. Because let's face it, if Doritos are in my house on a Friday night, I'll eat them. But if they're not in the house, I won't eat them. I know that's a simple technique, but I tell people, well, if you haven't got cakes or biscuits or chocolate in the house, you can't eat them.
Right. No, right. It's really the decisions you make in the supermarket is the key.
So it's absolutely. So the massive part of my program is more behavioral change rather than the mechanics. Mechanics are important. You have to be in a calorie deficit. But how do you stay in that calorie deficit without losing the plot? And how do you stay there for 12 weeks or 12 months? Like, losing 30 pounds, believe it or not, is easy. But can you keep it off in the next year? That's the hard part. And if you don't get the mental side of fat loss figured out, anyone can restrict their calories. But when they go back to being normal, they're going to put it all back on again. So I need to teach people, okay, this is why I'm controlling my calories. And now I can say no. When someone hands me that slice of pizza, I can say yes because I want it, or I can say no because I don't need it. There's a difference, yeah?
Yep, exactly. What would you tell the person that is having a difficult time just getting off the couch? What should they do?
They have to get off the couch.
We all know it's got
to start somewhere. Okay, but let's work. Yeah, you're right. Work backwards, or rather, yeah, work backwards, but go forwards. And I explain what I mean. Let's say someone's 270 pounds. They can't, literally haven't done anything for 10 years. They find it really hard physically and mentally to even walk around the block. the first thing I would look at is their goals. I said, well, okay, why do you want to get to 200 pounds? And on top of their goals, we talk about their reason why. Is it Simon Sinek or Sinek said starts with why? Well, you have to have a massive, dirty, great reason why they want to achieve that. And it's not to weigh 200 pounds on the scales. It's to get back into their clothes, feel confident, feel attractive, maybe get their sex life back, be able to walk without pain. So I say, let's write those goals down and focus on that reason why. Why do you want to lose 70 pounds? Because it's not to weigh 200 pounds. It's what that weight loss does. So when someone hasn't got a goal or a massive reason why, that's when they struggle. Now, I use a stupid example. You need leverage. If I was to put a gun, I'm not suggesting I ever do this. I'm not saying
right.
That.
No, I get it.
People freak out.
Yeah.
If I put a gun to that person's head and said, you're going to lose 50 pounds in the next 6 months or else, what's the chances that they will lose 50 pounds?
I would hope high, unless they want a slow death, you know.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is the desire is there, the motivation is there, that they've got a massive reason why. So when I have a conversation with a potential client, I ask them, what's the reason why? And a lot of people actually break down on the call.
Aww.
They say they want to be a role model for their children. They want to have sex with their wife again or vice versa, you know, because they haven't done that for 7 years because they feel so embarrassed with the light off. That's the reason why. They want to get back out of size 20 clothes. They want to get back into their wardrobe. They want to get their confidence back. So I say start with the end goal and work back. And eventually, sometimes you've just got to say, just get off the couch and go for a walk. Like, unless someone's physically incapacitated.
Right.
Everyone can walk half a mile, right? Everyone can. They might not want to, but they can. And once they can do half a mile, next week they can do 3/4 of a mile. And then the week after that, they can walk a mile. And then they can walk a mile 3 times a week. And that's how it starts. But it has to start at the beginning. But I get them to focus on the end goal and attach up some real emotion and some passion to why they want to lose 70 pounds. That's where I would start.
So do you think walking is enough? Like walking and then maybe just a little bit of free weights? Do you think that's sufficient?
Walking's the first step. But you're right, it's not enough in the end. Like eventually, 6 months later, if they're just walking, they're probably going to need to increase. So yeah, I get a lot of my clients to do some walking and some basic, if they've got some weights at home, some body weight stuff is enough. That's definitely secondary. I would get them to move 3 or 4 times a week and nail their calories. They've got to get that calorie deficit in place and they've got to really focus on what they put into their mouth and really understand why and the triggers and about how it's not about deprivation or eliminating alcohol or eliminating carbohydrates. It's not about that. It's about having a plan that they can see themselves doing for 12 weeks or even 12 months or 12 years. It's become part of their lifestyle.
Does it matter what time of the day you exercise?
Doesn't matter. Whatever suits the person. It's just more important to get it done than timings. Yeah, timings are irrelevant, really.
I mean, there's just so much information out there between diet, exercise. It becomes overwhelming.
It does.
And then you spend all your time doing research and absolutely doing nothing. It's like, because all these diets, it's, what's the one that everyone,
South Beach. That's quite a low carb, high protein, isn't it?
Yeah. What's the other one that everyone's doing? I forget.
Keto.
The keto, yes. How do you feel about the keto? Is it a bunch of BS?
Suck balls. It works.
But you see, people like say it's the best thing ever.
Right. Every diet, South Beach, keto, vegan, high carb, low carb, high protein, they all work on the same mechanism, that calorie deficit. So look, you can do keto. Like, here's a choice. If I was to give you a choice, you can lose 20 pounds. I'm not saying you've got 20 pounds to lose, but let's say you did. 20 pounds, eating carbs, having fun, enjoying a life and having a few drinks every week. Or we can suck the fun out of every moment of your life. No carbs, no alcohol, no sugar, no nothing, and lose the same 20 pounds. What do you want to go for, girl? Give me a choice.
What do you think?
Okay.
I'm not a glutton. I'm not a martyr, okay?
Who wants to be a martyr? You can do, no. If you want to do, get the same result the easy way or the same result the hard way. Like, keto works. I'm a fan of it as a weight loss tool.
Right, because there's a deficit.
But it's unnecessary.
Like, right,
it's
not that's magical. What it seems doing, like.
It's there's so unnecessary. Much,
there's too many rules. I feel like when there's... Look, I went on a diet after I had my second son. I gained 90 pounds. I gained a lot of weight. And I tried all these diets. And the interesting part was, what I found was, the more I thought about diets, the more obsessed I became with food and the more I craved it. And I, for me, the best diet was Weight Watchers, because you were allowed to eat whatever you want. I think Weight Watchers is a great tool for losing weight.
Can be for people.
Yeah, it can be. But I found the more I thought about food, the worse it was for me. And that if I just don't even think about it and just make the right choices, because I'm not a big foodie. Like, food is not that important to me. I mean, there are people out there going to be like, oh, you know, like, I'll eat a salad, no problem. I can eat it. That's it for the day. I'm not saying that's the right thing, but
yeah.
I'm just, and it's funny because I'm married to a chef, which is kind of crazy. I think he married the wrong person, but because food is just not a central, I don't get excited by food. I'm not,
do you not? Obsessed you really, with food. You don't get excited by it?
No, rarely, unless it's something like unbelievable. But I'm just like, all right, yeah, you know, like, I love ice cream is my thing. Like, give me good ice cream. Give me Haagen-Dazs. I'm like happy. But I'm not like a foodie. I don't get excited by it. I'm not, you know, I don't have a relationship with food. And that's where I think I could be wrong. This is just my opinion, not scientific. I think when people have too much of a relationship to food, that's when they get in trouble. Am I right? Absolutely. Or am I wrong?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But also, people don't understand. They don't understand how food works in terms of the numbers. When it comes down to fat loss, not necessarily health, but when it comes to fat loss, it's a numbers game. As you guys would say, you've got to know the math. Like, we put an S on the end and call it maths. You call it math. You have to, like, this is what most people do. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah. What most people do when they go on a diet, they say they want to lose 20 pounds. What's the first thing they do when they go on a diet? They cut the carbohydrates, don't they? They reduce the carbs, cut the booze, and they create a deficit. They don't know it's a deficit, but they just reduce their calories. And they usually ramp up their exercise. Okay, now what I'm teaching people is to actually track the number here. So what people do is they reduce the calories and they increase this, and they get into some kind of deficit, but it's usually unsustainable, because what they do is they drop all their carbs, they set their calories far too low for too long, and then they binge. So you've got this massive yo-yo. Now, what I'm doing is teaching people that they can still have all the foods they want. On my plan, there's nothing off limits. If you want to eat ice cream, cakes, biscuits, pizza, curry, whatever your poison is, you can have a little bit of that every single day and still lose weight, because it's about controlling the numbers. We need to know how many calories you're putting in. We're never really going to know how many calories you're burning, because those calorie trackers are wildly inaccurate. As long as we assume that you're in a calorie deficit, and the weight on the scale will show us if you're in a calorie deficit. If you lose 2 pounds this week, we know that you're in a calorie deficit. If you're not losing any weight, I don't care how healthy you think you are and how much exercise you think you're doing, if the equation is in that favor, you're not going to lose body fat.
Right. How do you feel about is there any exercise that someone should stay away from that you think is not good for a person?
Well, I guess in context, it depends. If someone's not doing anything, any type of movement is going to be good. But there's nothing not really. You could go down the hot yoga route. Like, it's very trendy, isn't it? Hot yoga.
Love hot yoga.
It's brilliant if you can do hot yoga, as in, there is one school of thought, I don't necessarily think it, but there is one school of thought that thinks because you're so hot and the muscles are pliable, you could end up damaging the joints from overstretching. That's a school of thought. I don't necessarily know if that's true or not. I've only done it a couple of times myself. I quite enjoyed it. So, but I don't think there's anything that's, I guess the devil's in the dose, isn't it? If someone's running 10K every day, they're probably going to damage their knees long term. Right. But if someone's running 3K four or five times a week, then jogging's very good for you. Do you see what I mean? Yeah,
so yeah, it depends exactly on the person.
If you're 300 pounds, jogging's probably not going to be your first choice of exercise.
Right. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned hot yoga. When I was doing hot yoga, I was in the best shape of my life. I wasn't doing any other exercise. It was amazing, but it's difficult. It depends the type of yoga you do. Like exactly. I was like vinyasa is a lot of movement. And there were times when I felt like I was going to pass out, like, wow, this is like intense. So I got a private instructor and we slowed
that's
down
the best way, yeah.
Yeah. And you slowed. I like the slower yoga where you hold onto your poses. Cause I feel like that's where the magic happens because you're in the pose long enough where you could build your muscle. Like that's, or refine it, or you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Or you stay in a stretch long enough. Yeah. Yoga could be very dangerous, like anything else, right? Anything you can get hurt. You could really get hurt if you don't do it.
It's all the devil's in the dose. Like if someone's never done weight training before and they go and try and lift some heavy weights, they're probably going to get injured.
Yeah.
But if they've had a couple of months of building up to it, then that same work, their work capacity is massively changed. Look, if you send someone that's if they go for a 1 mile run, that would kill someone if they've been on the couch for the last 10 years. But in 6 months' time, that 1 mile run will be very easy for nearly everyone. So I guess the devil's in the dose, it's context. So what I do think, you have to find something you enjoy.
Yeah, totally.
Because
yeah.
If you don't enjoy it, you're never going to do it. And it's a chore. And then when the weather's shit or you're tired or you got woken up by the kids, you're going to find every excuse not to do it. But if you've got something that you actually look forward to doing, and that's the trick for a lot of people. A lot of people don't enjoy exercise.
Yeah.
For me, that's I've got empathy for that. I don't fully understand it because I love exercise personally. And if I don't get to do it, it becomes a problem for me. So when someone says they don't really enjoy it, don't enjoy feeling good, or getting sweaty, that's foreign for me, but I get it. I get that's where people, some people are at.
Right. So I think, like, let me ask you this, and I think this is really important to our audience, especially a lot of people, you know, this is a career. I mean, we learned about your career, which I thought was fascinating, but from an exercise perspective, I think if someone just did something for 30 minutes, 20 minutes to get the serotonin, right? Or the endorphins.
Yeah,
like, how does it, why don't you tell the audience the benefits? Forget about losing weight, right? Not everyone that exercises is doing it just to lose weight.
No, absolutely.
What are the mental benefits and the benefits from doing your work every day, right? Like, what's the impact on that?
It's a good point. And there's literally no downside from going for a 30-minute brisk walk every day. And the upside to that is you're going to have more energy. By expending energy, it creates more energy. You're going to get fresh air. So you're going to get oxygen into the blood. Oxygen into the blood means oxygen into the brain, which means you're going to be far more productive at whatever work tasks you've got coming up. You're going to get some sunlight. I mean, okay, maybe not so much in the UK, but in the US, you have a lot of sunlight, which means you're going to sleep better. By getting 30 minutes of just fresh air and sunlight, any amounts, it massively affects your circadian rhythm. Circadian rhythm is just that built-in body clock, which means you're going to sleep better. You're going to have better quality sleep. If you have better quality sleep, you're going to have more energy when you wake up. You're going to have a brighter outlook on life. That's just from a 30-minute walk per day. There's literally, if I was employing people, I've often said this to my clients, if I was the CEO of any company, million-dollar, billion-dollar company, I would actually put in 1 hour of movement, allow every single one of my employees to have 1 hour of movement every single day. And a lot of people could say, well, think of the productivity that you're losing. No, you're missing the point. That's going to come back times 10. Because I used to be a trainer one-to-one. And when I was in central London, I used to train, I was in a private PT studio and all my clients were, where I worked was, I guess, the equivalent, London's equivalent to Wall Street.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Why I was working. So very fast paced, people making a lot of money, everyone wanting results, a lot of drinking, a lot of cocaine, everything going on. Wolf of Wall Street style, right?
Okay.
All my clients were those guys. And a lot of them had to sneak out of work just to come and see me for a 1 hour training session. And some people, their employers, if their boss was into the gym, they'd say, okay, you can go to the gym. but some would say you had to go to the gym out of office hours. It's just crazy. So a lot of these guys were having to come in at 6 a.m. or 8 p.m. But I would say, look, 3 o'clock every day, everyone in the office, if you want to exercise, you've got an hour. That's what I would do, because the productivity and mental health, I could list 100 different reasons why that would benefit the company and eventually make that company a lot more money. And that's what employers don't allow their employees to go to the gym or exercise. They're missing a trick. Now, things have obviously changed now because we're all at home, aren't we? The ball game has changed because we've kind of been forced to go back in. But now that when people are working from home, they can, as long as they log into their laptop, they can go and do an hour's of exercise now, can't they? No boss telling them they can't do that.
Right.
So that's been good from that perspective. But
yeah, I mean, think about it. Yeah. We're glued to our computers just sitting here like this, and especially with Zoom calls too. So I think it's important for people to, like, how do you think about intervals? So let's say someone doesn't have time to do it for an hour, but okay, I'm going to take a 15-minute break at this time. Then I'll do another 15 minutes, like interval training throughout the day, a little something, walking up and down the steps of your house or whatever it may be.
All counts. Yeah. Like if someone couldn't get half an hour or 45 minutes, they could do three lots of 15 minutes. And that would still equate to the same steps. They still get all the benefits, the mental, the physical aspect. There's no downside. That should be compulsory in someone's day, like a walk outside. That would be the first rung of the ladder. But there's the benefits of that from a physical and mental aspect are just tenfold.
Yeah. And it's so good for depression. I mean, it's really...
Exercise is the number one alleviator of depression.
Yeah, totally. It's so important.
And then
important.
Very close comes diet.
So right. You know, so what should someone eat? Because a lot of people, I feel like, are very... This whole COVID thing is making people just crazy, like just feel down, depressed. And they're not normally depressed people, right? Like someone just who's always up, they're just like, they're not feeling themselves. So you did mention in the exercise, but what in the diet should someone eat that helps with that?
Well,
or stay away from?
No, I was going to say that. Let's flip that on its head. Let's look at what they should stay away from. The best thing that anyone can do for every aspect of their health is to reduce alcohol. Now, I'm not saying eliminate it, because look, we all know the upsides of a few drinks. It makes you feel good. It's a nice, help you relax a little bit, but we're talking 2 or 3 glasses of wine. But the alcohol consumption, I'm sure it's been the same in the US. In the UK, it's gone literally through the roof in the last 12 months. The amount of alcohol being bought from supermarkets to consume at home, I drank more in 2020 than I ever have done in my whole life.
Wow.
To the point where I did my first ever dry January.
Wow.
I've just not drunk anything now. But in terms of from a mental, you said that people aren't feeling good about themselves. If you look at what alcohol does to us, to start with, it's a depressant, isn't it? A lot of people are blocking out reality. When someone gets drunk, like, it never ends well, does it? Let's be honest. It just doesn't end well. Like,
oh, gosh, no.
Like, you've got your significant other across the room. When you get drunk, there's a high chance you're going to have some type of argument. You get that. The phrase I use is when someone gets a bit arsy. Like, you just start poking at someone. You're agitated. You're annoyed. Someone can say the wrong thing, and you literally go ballistic. But in terms of what alcohol does to your brain, if you're along the lines of being ever had mild depression, or you've got some type of issues, the wrong word, like some challenges with your own mental stability, alcohol is like red rag to a bull.
Yeah.
Like it's like putting gasoline on a fire. Like, why would you do it? What it actually physically does to your brain, you just wouldn't do that. On the flip side, let's take away that. More vegetables. You can't eat enough of them. Get your green vegetables in. Essential fats, one of the best things for the brain. So fish oil. So if you're eating good quality salmon a couple of times a week, if you can't get that, supplement with a fish oil supplement. I'm a big believer in the good quality multivitamin mineral. just to cover the bases. Mm-hmm. We could talk about this for 3 hours, couldn't we? We need to have another podcast.
You could come back. Totally. Yeah. We'll talk about that. We'll go into
so much, we'll dive so much deep we into talk that. About, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I find it's fascinating, especially now, because I just think just our lives have been turned upside down, you know? So, you know, it's interesting with me with the alcohol. I've cut back my alcohol, interestingly enough, since.
Yeah.
Because usually when I drink alcohol, I'm out at concerts, I'm out at events. That's when I get myself in trouble. I consider myself a binge drinker. So I've gotten kicked out of place. Like, I'm not happy about this. That's a whole nother podcast, but I've gotten kicked out of quite a few places for being too drunk. So I'm not proud of that. That's for sure. Yeah. But I will say that I've been good throughout this as far as drinking that. Yeah. It's just driving me crazy because I'm not doing as much, but what I'm trying to do now is get back to yoga. And then when it gets nicer out, I'm going to start walking. But yeah, so all of that has been very helpful, and I know it's going to be helpful to our audience. And your career has been very interesting, and the progression has been interesting. Let me ask you this. What was your worst career moment that you could think of?
Worst career moment? In my current career or previous career?
Just in your entire career. Think of the worst career moment you've ever had.
Worst career moment. Okay, this was in fitness. I was in central London and I lost a couple of clients. They came to the end of their time with me. Maybe they'd booked a block of training sessions. Although I generally would keep a lot of clients. Most people would book 12 weeks of working with me, but a lot of them would end up staying 6 months, a year, sometimes 2 or 3 years. I don't know what happened, but it just... I had about 5 or 6 clients all come to the end of where they were about to renew. And I had probably about £5,000 or £6,000 that I was expecting to come in all in 1 week, but it was like, it would have lasted me for a couple of months. Right.
Ooh, okay.
And 5 or 6 just didn't renew. It was almost like, every client had called each other and said, "Don't renew when it comes to working the Gavin." It's like, but it wasn't a conspiracy, but it seemed like a conspiracy. So I went from being able to pay the rent, and I couldn't pay the rent. I couldn't pay my gym rent. And I, for a period of about 3 months, I was literally robbing Peter to pay Paul. Like, as soon as I made some money, I'd pay a credit card bill. Then I was taking money off one credit card to pay that credit card to pay my gym rent. So I wouldn't say I was depressed, but I was very, very down. And I had 3 or 4 months where I had to claw myself out. And I realized that no one was going to come and bail me out. And I tried to explain to a few of my friends and colleagues that, like, it just had this business kind of collapsed on me. But weirdly enough, I dug myself out, as you always do. And then the next year was my best ever year. So do you know Jim Rohn, the old philosopher? Do you know Jim Rohn?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. He said, after expansion comes recession, but then after recession comes expansion. And it all stuck in my head. I thought, I know this, I'm going through bad times at the moment. But I know if I keep paying, get your head above water, it'll come good. And then I had a massive jump up. That next year was my best year ever.
So you kept going. So that's like, yeah, you just didn't give up.
Kept going.
Just like, okay.
Just didn't give up. Like, I was close. So I even had a conversation with my dad. I asked to borrow some money, and I'd previously borrowed some before and didn't pay him back. And he said no this time. And I thought, fuck, even my parents aren't going to help me out. I need to dig myself out. So that was a lesson. But it was, you could say that maybe I manifested that myself. Maybe I did something to those clients, they left. But it was almost like a joke. Like, 3 clients said they're not renewing. Then I kind of said to myself, well, there won't be a 4th. And then the 4th one didn't. And then it was like the 5th one and the 6th one. But when you're expecting, it's like, imagine being paid a month's wage and all of a sudden that your boss said, "We're not paying you this month." That would leave a lot of people in the shit, wouldn't it?
Like, yeah, yeah. So how did that change you? Like, did it change the way you did business as far as having like maybe a little bit of a nest egg, or
Yeah.
Like, how did that impact you mentally? Or yeah, how you-
I kind of realized I'd had to maybe, as you said, nest egg, save a little bit more.
Yeah.
And because I never thought that would happen. So now I had to put a contingency plan in place saying, well, that could happen again. And I would allow it never to happen. Even if it did go horribly wrong, I would never be in that position again. Yeah.
Yeah. I always think that things happen for a reason and it's there to teach you a lesson. And I also almost think the fact that your parents didn't give you the money was actually a good thing because it probably made you work, like figure things out. Because I think when you have a safety net, it doesn't allow you to bring out your full potential, right? Because it's almost complacency and entitlement, and then you have that. But yet, when you're on the bottom, that's like when like the magic happens.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Good. All right. So every single one of my guests, I ask them these three questions. It's part of my Your Career Cure $50 million contest. Now, you're not going to get $50 million, but what I am going to do at the end of the year, I'm going to get all of the answers for my guests, and I think I'm going to have a contest and see who wins. Yeah, like that. That's kind of fun. So, all right. So the first question is, what is the one cure that you would provide for anyone in their career or as an entrepreneur to cure their mistakes? Like, what's the one thing that you would do?
To cure their mistakes?
Yeah, or a particular mistake. Like, what's your cure?
Well, I'll look at this from an entrepreneurial perspective, because I've never been employed as such. So let's look at it from that perspective.
But I always think that that's your career, right? Like people think
that
career,
is my career. Yeah.
Everybody thinks when I talk about career, I know I'm going off a little. Everyone thinks it's just like you're working for someone. No, when you're a business owner, that's your career. So it encompasses that as well. So go ahead.
I would say just to not give in. Like it kind of, if you've got a certain goal in mind, you're trying to achieve something. I think a lot of people, certainly within the entrepreneurial endeavors, they quit too early. I think they kind of overestimate what they can achieve in the first year, but vastly underestimate what they can achieve in 5 years. And that's not my phrase. I stole that from Tony Robbins, actually. but it all sticks in my head. I think if you know you've got a certain goal in mind and you're passionate about what you're doing, you've got to give it like, especially if you're, someone in their 20s, they think they're going to be a millionaire by 30. Let's be real here. Like, the goal is to be a millionaire by your 50, if that was the goal. You need to work at this. Like, every overnight success has taken 2 decades of hard work for most people, right?
Yep.
Like, you're not going to do that in the first year. Probably not going to do that in the first 3 years. It's going to take, like, I've been doing what I'm doing now full-time for 12 years, and only now is it getting to the level that I thought I could do in the first year. It's taken 12 years to get to where I am now.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, so COVID helped you, it seems like.
Things doubled last year.
That's
COVID
crazy.
COVID was personally, which is weird because I felt quite bad because a lot of people in my profession that have got gyms and were working one-on-one with clients, they literally lost everything. Yet with me being already online, I doubled. And I felt bad. I kept it under wraps and, help them out. But so it was a bit of a double-edged sword. I felt I had my best year ever, but at the same time, thousands of people are dying. It was a weird one, you know?
Right. But your work, though, you are, for what you do, I think you're saving lives because you're working on people's diet, their health, their exercise, and that impacts their also mental health as well. So I think what you're doing is very, very important, especially for right now. All right. Second $50 million question is, what is the one cure you would give corporate America in order to improve it? So what's the thing that you would do to improve corporate America?
It's funny you ask that because I actually answered that question before, even though without going into this section. And that would be, to allow people within their work time to exercise. Like, let's take a step back. Pre-COVID, when everyone was going in 8 to 5 or 9 to 5, I would put an hour's worth of gym walk, exercise time in the day. Like you would schedule a meeting with your boss, I would put that in. Right, 3 o'clock, fuck off to the gym. Go, yeah. Get out the door. Because I know that the benefits would pay me as an owner of the business. Like any CEO or any business owner that's watching this now or listening in, if you're not allowing your employees to exercise, I'm telling you right now, you're missing a trick. It's costing you money.
You're so right.
It's costing you money. And it's costing you the sanity of all your employees. And it's costing you the length of the time that they'll stay with you. If I was a business owner and I said to all my employees, you can have your lunch break and you can still go to the gym, is that person likely to stay with me for longer? Or if I said, no, you have to go to the gym before you come to work or afterwards, and I don't care about your kids or your childcare or the other, like, are you going to work for me longer or harder? Are you going to go for the version that allows me to get exercise done? I think
it's so true. I actually can attest to that because I told you I did private yoga. I actually had my team come with me. We'd go at 7 o'clock in the morning and they would do yoga. And I found that when they got to work, they were less clouded. They were more motivated. And I mean, it's a win-win. I mean, it's a no-brainer. It really is a no-brainer. And especially, I know the United States, we are known to be probably the most overweight country in the world, right? So I think that would be so helpful from a wellness perspective. Yeah, totally. That's really good advice. Okay, last question, last $50 million question. What is the one cure you would give to someone that is stuck in their career or business, feeling stuck? How would you get them unstuck?
Simple. Get a coach. Get a coach. Get a coach that can basically condense years and years of struggle down into it. Like you could avoid all the pitfalls, know what to do, when to do, how to do it. I'm not just saying that because I'm a coach, because I've had 5 coaches in one area of life in the last 3 or 4 years, and they can massively time collapse. Why spend 2 or 3 years working out how not to do something when a coach can come in and tell you on day one what works and what doesn't work? And that's whether you're in a career like conventional corporate America or wherever, or entrepreneurial. Yet there's someone that you're trying to achieve has done what you've done, made a lot of money, and have done it in half the time that you'll struggle with. So why would you not? So you need to invest in yourself. And that means paying money. Pay money to a coach and time collapse everything, get everything accelerated by 10. That would be my one piece of advice on that.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I do think like a lot of us know what to do logically, but yet we don't do it because we don't hold ourselves accountable. And I think, yes, a coach can give great advice, like you may be completely lost, but I also think that a coach provides...
Hold you accountable.
Yeah, which I think a lot of people lack. It's like, okay, I know what I need to do. I just don't do it. So you have this person that helps you along the way. And I think that is where like so much of the value is, right? Like exercise. Absolutely. We all know to exercise. It's not brain science.
It's not.
Well, I don't mean it like that, but you know what
I mean. No, you're absolutely right. And to take it back to someone losing weight, everyone knows what to do.
Yeah.
Like they might not know the terminology, but people know that they used to eat a little bit less food, move their body. That's fat loss. So the mechanics are very, very simple, but the psychological aspect of that
and the
accountability. And that's what a coach working with someone like myself is going to hold them accountable on a weekly basis. And they're going to be in a group where they're working with 10 or 12 other people that are going to hold them accountable.
Right.
And when left to their own devices, when it comes to food and exercise, people will take the shortcut or they'll skip it. But when someone's going to say, have you done what you said you'd do? That changes the game. So accountability. Yeah,
totally. Now, let me ask you, I'm just curious. In your coaching, do you actually like do exercises with your clients or do you tell them what to do?
I show them what to do once, tell them what to do, and they're responsible for doing that themselves.
Oh, okay.
But we'll really focus on the nutrition side. I'll teach that and the psychological aspects of the coaching.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right. So thank you so much for being on your Career Cure. I think you're my first. What's the appropriate? What was the job title?
not male review artist.
Yes, male review. I think you're probably going to be my only.
Probably the first and only. Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't assume that, but.
You shouldn't assume, but we could probably agree on that, though, yeah? Right?
Yeah, from a statistical perspective, yeah.
There's probably not many ex-male strippers on LinkedIn that are doing very well in the coaching business. Probably, I don't know anyone. So there could be.
Actually, you know what's funny? I placed in my career someone in Florida. He was a stripper, but also an engineer, like an aerospace engineer.
And you got a job.
Yeah, like my client's like, you got to see what he looks like. It's like all the ladies love him. I'm like, oh my God.
Which does help, and it shouldn't do. It does help in a career placement, doesn't it? Like,
it's we're so very fit. Yeah. You know how to deal with people, right?
People, so if you're around people like good looking people. Simple as that.
Well, there's a bias for that, but it shouldn't matter what you look like. It shouldn't matter.
It shouldn't. But we know that it does. It shouldn't, but we know that it does.
It should not.
Unfortunately. It's the reality.
It really is. So,
yeah.
Well, how can I'm going to put your contact information in the podcast, but how can someone contact you?
LinkedIn is my stomping ground.
Yeah.
That's where I do most of my work. Most of my clients are just Gav Gillibrand, simple as that, or gavgillibrand.com. That's my actual website. It'd be good if they want to get a copy of my book. I'd love them to get a copy of my book.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about your book. Like, is there anything you want to promote? Show us your book.
Yeah. I've got it right here. It's called The GHG Method.
Oh.
And it's called, I'll read out to you, A No Bullshit Approach to Losing Body Fat, Upgrading Your Mindset, and Radically Changing Your Life. So they can go to theghgmethod.com, or it's on Amazon as well.
Okay, good. I'll provide the links to that.
Yeah, all right. Brilliant. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you again, Gav. I appreciate you being on the show. And folks, don't forget, happy career, happy life. Until next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget, happy career, happy life.